You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
Year, Stephanie, you want to amaze? $180,000 from local churches was raised out of their budgets to help people in need from 27 churches. Yeah.
Welcome, everybody, to the City Gospel Movement podcast. I'm Stephanie Weber, and today we are talking to an engineer, pastor, philanthropist, author, educator, filmmaker, and playwright. And believe it or not, this is one person in the studio. Dr. Roger Valsey is the lead pastor at Valley Christian Church and Schools in Dublin, California, in the Bay Area. He is a passionate believer in the church reaching the city and is the founder of CityServe of the Tri-Valley, a nonprofit comprised of 27 churches that have donated over 200,000 hours of volunteer time to their city, and believe it or not, have raised almost $1 million in the last 2 months. So buckle up, everybody. You are not going to want to miss this conversation. Roger, I'm so thrilled that you are joining us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, Stephanie, it's an honor to be with you.
So, Roger, usually there was an aha moment for most of us when, you know, we were just going along with our life and our professions, and there's something happened where we just saw things differently. I would love to have you go back to that moment for us to just kind of help create a framework of why you're doing the things that you're doing now. Take us back to that moment.
Yeah, you know, that moment for me happened in about 2005, where a group of pastors, we were at the time in my hometown of Fremont, and so we were interviewing some government leaders, and we're asking a question, how can we help the city or serve the city? And Fremont's in a unique city, has more languages than New York City, and they were just very skeptical of this evangelical brand of Christianity. And so they pointed us to what's called the Family Resource Center. It was an ingenious idea that the city founders had put into our community, which are two buildings where all the nonprofits reside. So that's the government nonprofits and all the independent and a few other faith-based, all of them were in there. And so when they told us to go see if you can help this organization. So we did a tour of this place called the Family Resource Center. And as we did that, all of a sudden this epiphany came to my mind, these other pastors, you know, what these nonprofits are doing are basically what the Bible says we should be doing. And so we just came up with this idea and we just talked to the person that ran the whole building. Can we open up an office here? And all we're going to do is send volunteers to make sure that all you guys succeed. And so I was asked by the pastors to be the one to open up an office. And then for the first time, I started interacting with all these nonprofit and government agencies. And what it did for me as I opened up that office, and this is that aha moment you talked about.
Yeah.
For the first time in my Christian life, I'm off church property.
Yeah.
You know, I think my entire Christian life, we had this belief. It was never really stated, but it was a belief. If you want our Jesus, you got to come to our property. And all of a sudden, I'm spending a good portion of my week getting to know the most noble people who are helping people in crisis or, you know, just situations that are pretty painful for people to go through. And it just made sense that somehow the church would help these people succeed. And so we had to get over all that idea about, you know, we don't care if you have Jesus's name on your door. We don't care if you're faith-based or not. We just said this, we want to help you succeed because you're helping people God loves.
That's awesome. I love those turning points for people. So then what, Roger? Now you've had this moment, you're a lead pastor. How do you take this and expand it into your congregation and the next steps for what you think God wants to do?
Yeah, you know, my story, I call it the will of God, something you stumble into, because I'm not smart enough to figure it out. So I did that for almost 3 years.
I think that's most of us, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I did it for 3 years in Fremont, and it really changed my whole philosophy of church. And while I was doing that, another church in Dublin called me and asked me to be a lead pastor. And, you know, when you go through those interviewing process, they ask you all those philosophy questions. And I just told them, frankly, I go this, if you hire me, I will take you off this property. And then I use this line, and I think it's a great theological line to have a lot of conversation, but I just told them God plants churches to reach cities. Mm-hmm. That ultimately the church that they were asking me to be a part of, which was 50 years in that community, why did it ever begin? It only began in the heaven's mind because there are people in that community that God wanted to reach. And so I just said this, if you guys hire me, that's what I will do. Now, at the time, I was only thinking our church and body, because one thing I noticed in church conversation, people are kind, but they're not always honest, meaning like they'll just nod their head and say, that's a really cool idea, and I'm glad you like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it gets very difficult when you have limited resources and you're going to make hard choices along the way. But the way it kind of busted open for us initially is when I got the job, I found out 2 weeks into my new job as a lead pastor that I inherited a building campaign where I was responsible for raising $5 million. I tell people I was interviewed well enough to get the job, but not well enough to know what job I was getting.
So you became the fundraiser.
Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden, oh my gosh. And you know, I don't know about what listeners are listening here, but Bible schools and seminary are not very good at the fundraising thing. At least telling us right. That that's really part of the job. So, I just said, you know what, let's make this campaign an outreach. And we called it Vision for Our Valley. I, went to the missions committee and said, why don't you bring in, I asked for a volunteer. A gal rose her hand that was just retiring banker. I said, go bring me 4 nonprofits to this church service when we have pledge cards. And then I started meeting with the mayor, and I asked the mayor to come to church. And then when we had collected our pledge cards, I put on, this is kind of funny, they never teach you how to do pledge cards in Bible school seminar, but on one side you ask for money.
That's weird.
On the other side, I said, I'm going to ask for hours. And then as we collected, in front of the mayor, I said, Mayor, as part of our building campaign, we're going to give our community $2,500 from this church. And I'm going to give monthly reports to you on how these people are doing. And so that started a reporting mechanism, which I've done for 10 years. And that first year we gave 4,000 hours, the second year, 10,000. And then all of a sudden in year 3, churches started calling me saying, hey, I would like to join your serving network. And I said, I don't have a serving network. I have a building campaign. Would you like a pledge card? And it just kind of evolved after that, because once 3, 5, 10 churches came there, I just said, you know what? Why don't we take this out of our church, which is called Valley Christian Center, and just make a nonprofit where the pastors are leading. And so we created the name City Serve the Tri-Valley, and that's how that whole kind of movement began.
Oh, that's so fantastic. So I love the organic nature of that too. And just the creativity that truly just, you know, we have to recognize that comes from the Lord, right? And those ideas that just kind of like, oh, well, maybe I could do this, sometimes out of desperation.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, looking back, it's probably more naive than courageous. But you know what? I think it hit the heart of God's people and the heart of God. And this is the odd part. I always forget to tell this part of the story, but it seemed like the more we served, the more the money came in. You know, and Stephanie, what is just, to me, a miracle of miracles. I mean, this was in 2008. I had never been a lead pastor, never raised money beyond car washes. And I watched in that 4 or 5 years, $5 million come in.
Right. In an economic downturn.
Yeah. I mean, in the middle of a recession. And so it was an unbelievable story that then birthed this nonprofit that's just continued to grow today.
So let's talk about that nonprofit. So you have over 27 churches now partnering with you. Tell us a little bit just about the structure, what you guys do, and the areas that you're serving in your city.
Yeah, if you look at our mission statement, we have 3 phases that we've kind of stumbled in. The first thing we did is just coordinate. And so what we would do is go to government, nonprofit, and faith-based, and we would then just research what's in our community. And we create a newsletter. And then all we would do is advertise to the churches that wanted to be part of us is here's opportunities for you to serve in your city. So the first, I would say 5 years, that's all we did is send people in the church out into the community saying, here's a serving opportunity. And I just think people need to realize every nonprofit and government usually needs two things. They need money, which I don't have. And a lot of them do need volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I found that place of serving was the right place for people of faith just to say, I'm not here to change your organization or dictate what's going on. I'm just here to help you succeed because you're near people God cares about. Mm-hmm. So we did that for 5 years. And then we started realizing, wow, you know, this government agency and this nonprofit over here, you guys share a lane, but you're not talking. And so what we started to do is we do community services meeting. We do about 6 or 7 a year. And the cities were kind enough to let us host them in the city halls. And then these are the best 2 to 3 hour meetings a month where we tackle issues like homelessness. We tackle issues like immigration. We tackle issues like, you know, abuse or children living in cars. And we get all the players in there. And right. for the first time, everyone is learning what everyone's doing. Because the problem with nonprofit and government, because they're so tied on resources, they tend to only see their lane. And then if anything's outside their lane, they don't always see that part. And so it was just good to get people to collaborate.
So that I think the thing that's so interesting about that too is that there really is no mechanism in most cities for a neutral convener to pull those people together.
Absolutely. And you would think maybe the city could do it, but I don't know. For reasons I can't explain, the cities either aren't doing it or they don't feel they can. Obviously, a nonprofit can't do it. And so the church is kind of in this ideal place. And you know what's crazy? We get 40 to 50 people show up at every one of those meetings. And here's an amazing part about it. We're in the city halls. We start off with prayer.
Yeah.
And people there receive the leadership. And then we just say, let's tackle the big issues that are happening in our community. Now, I'm a preacher and I love the Word of God and I love what I call the meeting on Sunday, but I want to tell you, I'm more excited about that meeting in my community because I know what's happening there is beginning to affect the people that are in crisis and needing some help.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the second morph. And then the third one kind of came, there's two stories here that kind of force this one. One is the public school systems. I run a Christian school and I can spend hours talking about that whole world, but it's interesting in the public schools, there were these counselors in the schools who were dealing with families who either first they couldn't afford backpacks. Second, they did certain housing issues like they didn't even have beds, some of these families, yeah. or other ones just transportation needs. And they just said, who do we call? There was no nonprofit for it. And so they would call us and then we would start helping them. And then as we got involved with them, we started realizing, wow, you guys need transportation or you guys need some housing issues or you need some medical issues. And then because we started seeing the global picture, we said, can we walk you through the system? And this is a big part for every listener to hear. In every community, there's a system. It's comprised of four players. Your government has services, your nonprofits do, your faith-based does, and a few businesses do. Mm-hmm. But here's the reality I've just learned. When people are in crisis or need, it is not easy navigating that system.
Right. It's and a little disjointed, right?
It's very disjointed. So one of the most brilliant things we started to do is create an intake form with a database. And then we just started saying, can we walk you through the system? Mm-hmm. And this is where the people in the churches start hand walking people through the system to resolve these issues. I think then another one came, a county commissioner called us and there was some illegal immigrants living in, we have a county fair and there was actual stables and all these families were living there. And in California, they're obviously like other places in the country. What do you do with these families?
Right.
And so this county official called us in and said, hey, I've got children living in stables and the government system is so messed up right now. We're not sure we're keeping them, deporting them, whatever. But in the meantime, they need transportation. They need clothes. They need tutoring. Some of them need health care. And the reality is, if I get involved, then it gets really messy. Can you just take care of these families until we can figure out the system? And so we went down the interview. There's about 15 different families just living on this county fairground. And so what we did is got 15 different churches to adopt them mm-hmm. until the government can figure out what they were going to do with them. So these kind of things brought us into what I call our third C. We did the collaborating, then we did the coordinating, and then all of a sudden just casework. it's kind of become the biggest thing we do. It's the most complicated thing we do, but we're now the front entity in our community, and the police, the fire department, the school systems, the military bases, and the churches, they kind of start with the city, serve the Tri-Valley first, and then we hand walk people through the system to help them get out of whatever needs they have. So that's how it's evolved over 10 years.
It's so exciting. When we first met, you said something about that you have a go and a come congregation. And I would love for you to just kind of explain that vision and an idea that as a lead pastor, you are sharing with your community.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing all this from a pastor's chair. And as I talk to people and tell the story, I kind of get the sense people want to say, oh, Roger, that's your thing. Here's where I'm going to challenge people. It's not my thing. It's all of our thing. And I think it is a biblical thing. The reason I come up with that term come and go, I just observed, if you look at two data points in every church, budgets and calendars, I don't care. You can pick any church in the country you want, budgets and calendars. My instincts is that almost all that money or all that time is to serve people that are already there. Mm-hmm. And so I struggle with this as a leader. How much resources should go to people that are already there, and how many resources should go to people that will never come to the property? And so I started introducing this whole kind of concept in our church about, and the one is what I call the come congregation. These are the people that faithfully usually come to your Sunday services and involve your youth groups and whatever small groups you have. And then I call the go congregation. In our community, we have a military base, we have a federal prison, we have a county prison, we have public schools, we've got a lot of senior housing, you know, we've got homeless, we've got nonprofits. And the reality is this, what obligation spiritually, biblically do we have to those folks? And just to give a synopsis, and I think people get this, but I'm not sure we're living it. I believe when Jesus said go, he meant it. And I think when I talk to church leaders, I think we're stuck in a religious trap mm-hmm. where the whole system is basically serving people that are already there. Mm-hmm. So this is why I feel like I'm an irritant, and I don't mean to be, but I just want to remind church leaders, pastors, boards, anyone leading a church, cast the city. It'll change how you do the church. Now, I know most of us are so consumed just keeping up what we do in our property, we can't even see the city.
Right, right.
That's the big dilemma we're at right now. So to get into your question, part of budgeting both calendar and resources is how much resources are we keeping to serve people that are there, and how much are we going to serve people that are not there?
Yeah.
And there's the faith element of all that.
Well, it is a paradigm shift for most people, right? Because the traditional model is to serve the people that are coming. And I think that if I were to be so bold to say, I think there's probably just an incredible amount of fear in splitting that up into the go community, right? Because it's always that question of what if. Well, what if that doesn't work out? Or what if we don't have as many resources? Or how am I going to separate all these calendar issues and time and staff? And what would you say to that pastor who may be listening and just has this kind of tug at their heart, but that instant fear comes in and says, I don't know if we can do that?
Well, speaking as a pastor, speaking perhaps to pastors, I would say this. I think any pastor that preaches, it's easier to teach people than to live our own sermons. Mm-hmm. And go throughout the Bible. Every go element has every one of those fears you just talked about. Mm-hmm. Abraham faced it. Moses faced it. David faced it. Nehemiah faced it. You know, obviously the early church faced it. So one reason why I believe in a theology of the Holy Spirit, it's interesting on Pentecost, it's tied to the go. Because we have all these fears. We have all these roadblocks. We have all these insecurities. And we're afraid to go to a place we can't control, can't always measure. You know, can I just tell you this? You don't get a lot of financial resources back. So like in our community, we have two prisons, a women's federal correction facility, and then Santa Rita is the county jail. And those are probably within 3 miles of our church. See, to me, there's some things you need to pray about to discern the heart of God. There's some things you don't pray about. You just obey.
Mm-hmm. And go.
I have to go to those two prisons. I don't have a choice. I didn't create this geography, but I believe geography creates a mandate on our church. And can I tell you, every day I'm sending people in our church to those two prisons to do various organizations, various groups. And can I also tell every pastor out there, they're the worst tithers I have. And I say that as a joke. They don't have any means to give back to us for all that energy.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if I look at Matthew 25 as kind of a roadmap of what Jesus says we should be doing, it feels right in my spirit. It feels right to our leadership. We should be visiting the prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that costs something.
Right.
And we have to figure out how are we going to do that. But I don't believe I have a choice. I mean, you always have a choice. I have a choice to ignore and not say that's here. But if God does plant churches to reach cities, and if we cast the city as part of our why we exist and what is the mission of our church, then the right question is this: what are we supposed to do in that community?
Right.
And that's where, you know, I can tell you story after story of just, it just feels so right, Stephanie. I just tell you this, I get more excited when I'm off our property doing spiritual things.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And if you've ever been to our property, we have 50 acres in the Bay Area on a hill.
Gorgeous.
I have the most gorgeous property in the Bay Area, but my spirit soars when I get to, I don't know, just see the kingdom built and see people, you know, that God cares about being loved by his people off property.
Well, it does fill your soul. And, you know, oftentimes I call it fear practice. Like, we have to practice walking into things that don't feel safe, or where we have to really choose to trust that God is going with us in this vision and this passion, right? And then the more we do that, the more we feel that, oh, okay, now I can kind of go do the next thing because I'm okay. God showed up in this space. And I think that that's what's really, really fantastic about the just the progress and the progression. You know, this didn't happen yesterday. This, I think it's important for everybody to hear that this has been a process of trial and error and going and then continuing to go. And so I think one of the things that is so beautiful about what you've done is continuing to create a spirit of collaboration, right, with 27 churches. And I think it's important to remember that we don't want to do it by ourselves, nor does God want us to do it by ourselves. So I would love for you to just kind of share what that feels like and looks like, and maybe even kind of go back to, well, we started with three of us, or we started with five of us, and now we're up to 27, to just kind of be that encouragement of just get the momentum of people, but don't go thinking that you have to do this by yourself.
Yeah, you know, let me speak to the fear that I think is most churches, and especially pastors. There's a competition spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's so few resources, and we're afraid that some other church is going to steal. So yeah, one thing I think that the benefit of casting the city, that vision is so big, we can't compete with one another. We have to collaborate. Otherwise, we're never going to succeed.
That's right.
If the vision is only to keep who I already have and maybe steal a few from another church, then we're in competition. But if the vision is that God wants to build his kingdom in our city, it's going to take all hands on deck. So right. I'll start with that.
It's the big story versus the small story.
It is. And I think once you start casting the city, you realize, like, this may sound odd, probably one of the closest friends I have is the Catholic Church down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, too, the Catholics have been in this compassion lane much longer than the evangelicals.
Yeah.
And, you know, Father Lawrence and I have gotten to the place where we actually pulpit swap because
that's awesome.
So, I mean, what is really beautiful about this coalition of churches, a couple things. Number one, I didn't ask anyone to join. They all came to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that's bad sales or good sales, but what I'm just telling you, that's sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I'm around pastors, I'm always sensitive that there are always salesmen in every meeting.
That's
you know,
right.
This nonprofit, this group, this need, you know, and
It's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. Every day I get them in my email, my phone calls, and they're all noble. At least many, many are just really awesome things. You have to choose. But you know what's interesting? On this idea that God cares for people in the city and that we're called to do something as church in our city, every one of these churches over 10 years' time have sovereignly said, we want to join this.
And so let's stop right there, because I think that one of the things that's important is why. Why do you think that they came to you? Because people might be listening and going, well, maybe that's just a one-off scenario that happened. But what do you think had been started so that they wanted to join?
Well, you know, I think we're going to get into the why does behavior change? And I'll give it two things. I think one is the right belief has to be there. And then second, they just got to see some what I'll call fruit or productivity. Mm-hmm. What's the right belief? If God plants churches to reach cities, I think that idea is drawing churches to say, we got to figure out a way to collaborate. That we need to do something off our property, that we have to care for people there. So that idea is what's kind of drawn. And then just the other second thing is this, just the stories of God's people going out in the community and its impact has started waking up churches saying, really, it's come to the point, why am I not in this lane? And you know, here's the miracle of miracles. I mean, I'm just astounded that I'm a part of this, but I made a challenge, our board did, to the churches to give 1% of your budgets to people in need in our city. Now, I run a church and school. Budgets are so tight on churches. We never have enough money. But, you know, we said, hey, and you could do that on your own to any other nonprofit you guys would say, or, you know, do it through CityServe and this coalition, because I think it became obvious that when we do things together, in the name of a kind of a neutral thing, it just looks better for the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And last year, Stephanie, when I'm amazed, $180,000 from local churches was raised out of their budgets to help people in need from 27 churches. You know, and it's odd for me because I got to raise money for a church. I got to raise money for a school. And then in addition, I'm just talking to pastors and boards in the community. And I'm just in awe that churches would just say, you know what, we want to join with that. And we're going to start finding a way to get up to this 1% challenge.
Yeah.
Now, and whether 1% is the right number or not, the very fact that we all put money in the common pot to a cause that we all created, it's a magnificent expression of unity. And I think the big issue in our whole church experience, we're longing for unity and we rarely see it. Mm-hmm. Rarely, rarely see it. But out in our area right here, there's a true collaboration of churches serving the city.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that because, you know, the fruit, as you say, of that longevity of being in the community for this long and joining forces together as a united front with your CityServe for the Tri-Valley. Recently, you guys were awarded a pretty sizable grant from the city. And I'd love for you to just kind of share that story. And I think what's so critical about that is just, you know, this didn't, again, happen overnight, but the fact that you guys there with your collaboration have built a level of trust within the city government so that they are willing to give sizable gifts because they need the help. And you've built a level of trust that they know that if I give this money, I am confident that we're going to win, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I think is important as you do nonprofits like this, we're not here to compete with any other nonprofit or government or faith-based or business. So we're here to see all those succeed. That being said, there's always a lane in a community that isn't being met. There's just no nonprofit for, or the nonprofit does one part of their life and not all of it. For us, it was homelessness. West Coast or weather, it's probably just
the biggest issue in most cities today.
Okay. Well, here's where this gets me excited as a pastor. We decided on our own to do an inventory of every homeless person in our area. And then we created that database of their names, their stories, their situations, mm-hmm. where they're living, whether it's under a bridge or in a car over here. And then we wanted to try to create like a 10-point plan on how do we get them from this crisis moment to health, vocation, you know, and just sustainability. And as we were creating all that information, the counties and cities were aware that this was a growing problem. And they, the reason why they came to us and said this, you have more information on this than anyone else.
Interesting.
And you're closer to it than anyone else. So rather than us competing, can we just funnel your work and can we help you succeed in this?
And wow, so they were doing to you what you were doing to the other nonprofits in the beginning, right?
That's right. Well, nobody was doing it.
Yeah.
And so the police were calling us, the fire departments, the school system saying, hey, we have these homeless. And then when you sit down with them, because we created that intake form where we have a database of every nonprofit, every faith-based, every government, every business service, we can walk people through the system. And they just said, you guys are doing it so well. Why don't we just finance you to just kind of handle this? And so that whole issue right now is being led by the churches and walking with people. And so we have like three tiers of support. The first tier is like a 1 to 3 day person to help. The other one, another tier is like 3 to 3 weeks. And then sometimes it goes 3 months, 3 weeks to 6 months. And it depends on the story. But I think right now, because we're solving a problem in our community that nobody could, all of a sudden, in the last 2 months, we've gotten $650,000 from the county and almost about $150,000, $200,000 from local cities to help us succeed in an initiative that we were already doing.
Wow. Wow. And I think, you know, the thing that is so interesting about that is that started out of a place of wanting to just know. There's something about being known. And I think sometimes our agencies are just trying to quickly solve the problem, mm-hmm. right? And the idea of knowing them, knowing their story, where they live, what's the background, that to me is a game changer. And, you know, clearly something that every city needs.
Yeah, but, you know, here's where, and this is a big part. It was a huge epiphany for me. Most communities have a lot of services that are mm-hmm. helpful. Mm-hmm. It's just difficult to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to figure it out. And then let's admit, when people are in crisis, they're all always able to think the best. So they need someone to walk beside them.
Right.
And so once we mapped out all the services, we figured out how we can hand walk them through the system. And then here's the beautiful part too, is another part about this coalition that's magnificent. People need to hear this, is let's say there was an issue that no nonprofit or government was handling. And there are sometimes something as simple as not always simple, the PG&E bill is backlogged and hasn't been paid. The kids don't have beds in the apartment. You know, there's certain stuff like that.
Right.
We were able to, through by our coalition, we call the churches up out of their benevolence fund and say, hey, we have a family that we've vetted. They're genuinely in crisis. They got a backlog on their PG&E bill, let's say $5,000. Can you give $500? And we'd make those phone calls. And because of our reputation, we would raise that money to help that individual to get through that particular part of their crisis.
Right.
So the coalition was all adapting. And then think of that family when they see the churches respond and all of a sudden say, this particular part of your challenge is over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even I could tell you stories where, I mean, some of our leaders are so aggressive. There was a family that their own power almost got shut down because they couldn't pay the bill. And we had such favor with the government. We got the government leaders involved to call, which our electric company, PG&E, to not close it down until we can find a solution to help keep it going.
Yeah, they knew you were on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because they saw us on the scene, they just put grace to the whole thing.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that, of just kind of the view of the church and how it has changed, do you think, in your community? And what do you see as just kind of the hopefulness of something like this in other communities as far as the way that the church is viewed?
Yeah, you know, I guess what comes to my mind is this, that Jesus looks magnificent in our Tri-Valley, primarily because the people of compassion here are the people of faith, mm-hmm. and it's very readily seen. So it's hard to critique Christianity when they're the ones that are leading and all this serving and helping. And I think it's caused such a positive spirit that we're invited to situations, and you know, the faith side of us. And there's always this thing, you know, we're not here to necessarily push our faith on anyone. I mean, Eric Swanson says it best. We serve not necessarily to make people Christian. We serve because we are. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit different. It's not a bait and switch here. But you know what? I'm amazed in every setting I go to, government, nonprofit, even businesses, they're very aware that they have a church presence there and they like having us there. Mm-hmm. They just do. And so it's been a wonderful collaboration. And I think we figured out how to honor that space, because I think one of the tensions every community has to get, I think the greatest lie in our community is the separation of church and state. It's just not a biblical view. And the reality is this, it's a concession that we're saying our differences are so wide, we can't figure out how to partner. That is just such a bad idea, because the reality is if we can figure out how to partner, more people get touched. And so can we be in the same lane and not compromise our identities? Now, some communities may say, no, I think that's too much of an ask. But somehow in this area, we can be fully Christ followers and serve besides government and other nonprofit, and there's not a tension with that.
Well, and I think it also is, you've earned the right to be heard, right? And I think that is, again, this is not a overnight success. And that is really where I think so much of the message is you just have to start. And you just have to start building trust and the fact that you're going to continue to show up. That it's not just, oh, we're doing this one event and we're done and we'll hope to see you later. But it's that continuing to show up, continuing to stay in the game and continuing to build that trust. And then over time, it can be a game changer.
Yeah, you know, I always look at every community as like a round table, and in that table, there's different chairs, and you have the business chair, the education chair, healthcare chair, the entertainment chair. I think what is missing is that the empty seat is the faith-based chair. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of complaints in a lot of communities or where our community is going, but part of it is because we're not showing up to the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I'm in a unique place in the country, but I don't think the San Francisco Bay Area is a haven of Christian respite. But I will tell you, people enjoy it when we walk in the room. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of respect for what we do and how we do it. And to my great, great surprise, I've got county, city, nonprofit leaders asking us to lead, and they will follow. Mm-hmm. That's just amazing.
It's really beautiful. And you can almost just feel the presence of the Lord in that as you talk of how he is changing the perspective and the hearts of minds of people. It's a softening almost, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I have to, you know, obviously got 10 years we're trying to condense in one podcast, but, you know, some doors were closed, you know, because they didn't want any faith people in there. And so you just kind of serve around and wait and just see all that. But it's weird. When you sit in a chair long enough, eventually a door will open and then you have to prove, are we here to cause trouble? Are we here to tell what they're doing wrong? Are we here to proselytize? And you know what? I find if you just keep that humble place of serving, eventually you win them over. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had city officials, I've had prison officials say, you're never going to have access to this. And now that I've been here 10 years, we have access to all of it.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to this belief. We're called to care. So even if you tell us we can't, we're still called to do it. So whatever barriers there, this may sound weird as a pastor, there's been years I've just had to pray, Lord, you're going to have to open the door. Mm-hmm. I've got the people ready to go in, but unless that door's open, we can't go in and fulfill what you've told us to do. And you know what? He's been faithful to open those doors. What's amazing now is, I'll just call it favor. There's a lot of favor wherever we go.
Well, I think that the Lord wants to give all of us that. Like, I think that so much of it is just the willing spirit to push into those places and the patience to, when the door is shut, to continue to pray and to believe that that door will not stay shut forever.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast. It's been so fun to hear people talk about how this podcast has impacted the way they're leading in their city. We know some of you listen to this podcast while running, on your commute, or even walking your dog. If you can, just take a few seconds and comment on whichever podcast platform you listen to. Rate the podcast and write a simple message. These comments make a huge difference in getting the message about City Gospel Movements out. Thanks for listening, and we're so glad you're a part of the conversation.
So, Roger, I know you're a filmmaker and I'm very passionate about sharing this vision for the city and the vision the church should have for the city. You created a little docuseries called City Gene, which I would highly recommend everyone to watch. And we'll give you all the details of how to get that information at the end of this podcast. But tell us a little bit more about why create City Gene. Where was the passion, the vision behind that?
Yeah, City Gene is kind of a collaboration with another organization I work with called Transforming the Bay with Christ. And they had asked me to speak several times about this CityServe story. And as I was telling the story, I found most people wanted to hear two questions. A lot wanted to hear, how do you do this? Which is fine. And there's a lot there. But I saw some people just say, well, that's just your thing. And this is, in my spirit, this is not Roger's thing. This is the church's thing. Mm-hmm. And so my concern was, okay, are we reading the Bible correctly? Because it felt to me that we're reading the Bible in a way where cities were props in the background and just something that was just not really noticed or even cast as we read the Bible. And then all of a sudden I started realizing, wait a minute, cities aren't props, they're characters. And in fact, I started realizing they're not just characters, they're the main character. Or to say it this way, in the Bible, God's not just changing individuals, he's trying to transform communities. So I really went back and then said, you know what, if you really want to have behavior change, especially for evangelical Christians, you got to show them in the text. Mm-hmm. So I just started doing more writing and research on what does the Bible say, the relationship between the people of God and the city. And so this series, in collaboration with TBC, is just a kind of a primer way to introduce mainly church leaders, or all Christ followers, but just this idea that, wait a minute, it really isn't the church unless you cast the city. And then we went back and forth about how, and it just felt right to just pick four stories, four stars in the Bay Area, and then let me kind of narrate some truth behind it. And that's how that whole thing evolved.
Yeah. And let me make sure that everybody knows it's City Gene, G-E-N-E.
Yes.
Not denim jeans.
Not denim jeans, yeah. City Gene. It's just a term I've coined and I'm writing about because I feel it's my calling to make sure everyone's infected with the City Gene.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is,
that's super cool.
When people want to have this conversation, I try to do it as tactfully and as gently as I can, but I also know I get people thinking. Mm-hmm. And I'm also aware, at least in my experience, this idea of casting the city as part of the church is relatively new for most of us. I mean, Stephanie, I've been in school most of my life. I have 4 degrees, 3 of them are theological education, and not one professor ever told me about casting the city as part of the mission of the church. Mm-hmm. It took that original story for me to get off church property and realize, I think we're missing the boat on why we exist if we don't somehow start casting the city as part of what we do. And so I coined the term City Gene, and it's just my way of saying, you know what, everyone, every Christ follower, every church leader has to. I don't believe it's an option. We have to cast the city as part of our mission. And I know that's somewhat provocative because I see so many mission statements that center around, let's just say, maybe evangelism or community or what I call personal thriving. And all those have a part of the Christian story, but if we pull back and look at the entire biblical epic, can we not agree that we serve this God who has constantly got his eye on somebody who's not in the community?
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Constantly bringing people out from a community experience into a place that's scary so that we can somehow bring the kingdom to them. Mm-hmm. This may sound weird. We know what City Gene is essentially. It's just doing global missions locally.
That's right.
We get it globally. We get it globally. Every church I raised to, they get it globally. But they just, what's crazy to me is most churches don't have the same passion locally as they do globally. And that makes zero sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I say preach it. Continue to preach that. Please, please. Roger, my last question today is, what's next? Like, clearly you're a guy with big ideas and visions and dreams. And what's kind of next on the horizon, the things that you think about and ideas that you have?
Is that next for me or next in this whole movement? I just want to kind of understand your question that you're asking.
I would say either or. Like, you know, just kind of maybe the first thing that just popped into your head as I even said that.
Well, you know, I'll say this. We are part of a movement we didn't create. Mm-hmm. As we travel the nation, and I've only traveled the nation, I haven't gone outside America with this whole thing, there are stars, valiant individuals, some are church-centered, some are on their own nonprofits that are starting to do what I call living out the city gene. Mm-hmm. And the more I see this movement, the more I just see it's not going to ever go back. It is the future of the church. And so if you answer your question is this, this is a movement that has sovereignly been birthed. It's all over the nation. And there is this desire to live out our faith beyond a church service.
That's right.
And so I think church leaders have to figure out how to build a bridge from your community to your city. And I think if we don't do that, I think we're failing part of our mission. There's Christians, there's people that want to serve, and they just don't know how to do it. And so I think what is next is just an ongoing movement of just people saying, I've got to get much more involved in the city. Mm-hmm. and much more practically involved. That would be my large view answer. And then if I give a short view, this is a personal observation that steps on a few toes, but I've learned to be provocative to get people thinking. As I travel the nation, I see most of the movements. Most of them are serving days. And I think they're beautiful for what they can do. And every year, our church supports the city in a serving day. Ours is coming up this month. And there's even been times we shut down our Sunday service to go do that because it's that important. Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger challenge on what's next is how do we serve every day?
Yeah.
Because I feel like the witness for Christ amps up so much higher when we say we're not giving a day of compassion, we're just compassionate people. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different plane. So if you ask me what is next, I think it's this idea that we're going to be living out our faith every day in the community. And what's really cool about it, there's a network already in every community you can do that. It's just that as a church, folks, we haven't figured it out yet.
That's right. That's right. Well, Roger, please keep going. Keep sharing your story. Keep being provocative. It's such an incredible example. And if people want to see more of what you're doing with CityServe for the Tri-Valley, how would they get a hold of you and your organization and maybe even see some of these City Gene docuseries?
There's probably two websites that you can get a hold of me. I mean, the CityServeTriValley.org is all the things that we've done. I'm really proud of that website because here you have a church website that's posting all the resources in our community. And I love the fact police and fire department and school systems are all using it to help people. So there's kind of the hub of that. And then, you know, there's probably a link that you can send to the Valley Christian Center site. It's comediscoverbcc.org and you just go to my page on there. And then, you know, obviously all my bio information, some of those City Gene videos are there and stuff like that. And then if anybody wants to get a hold of me, just call the church. I'll pick up the phone.
Valley Christian Center. What a pleasure to be with you. And I'm just so thrilled for what's happening in your area and just the message of hope that you bring to so many. And so keep sharing that story, friend.
Thank you, Stephanie.
That hearing stories of what's happening in other cities inspires us to believe what's possible in our own city. One resource we want you to be aware of is called 16 Innovative Ways Churches Are Uniting. This is a list of 16 ideas from 16 different cities of ways churches are coming together to love and serve the city in the name of Jesus. You'll want to read this list because there are some pretty creative ideas that will inspire work in your city. Check out citygospelmovements.org/resource/innovate. Again, that's citygospelmovements.org/resource/innovate to read this list of 16 innovative ways churches are uniting. Good ideas are worth spreading. Isn't that what they say on TED? Well, we're going to use it here for the City Gospel Movements podcast, too. Take a screenshot of this episode and share it on your social media. Subscribe to the podcast so you're aware of the latest episodes. And share this episode with a friend who may relate to the topics that we talked about today. We can't share these ideas alone, so thanks for partnering with us.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movements podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.